This Frontenas podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and the changing demographics in the Southwest. On January 8th, ground was broken for Texas Public Radio's new headquarters adjacent to Westside San Antonio's historic Alameda Theater. The sounds of hammers and confetti cannons were accentuated by mariachi music as construction got underway at the new Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center. Irma Nicolas is a San Antonio native, born in 1932. Her husband, Emilio Nicolas, was born in 1930 in Coahuila, Mexico. He moved to San Antonio around age 18 to learn English. He earned degrees in chemistry and biology, and he built Univision, the largest Spanish language network in the U.S. A media power couple of their day, Emilio and Irma Nicolas would establish a cultural and economic legacy for all Spanish-speaking Americans. Guillermo Nicolas is Emilio and Irma's son. A successful businessman and philanthropist, he secured naming rights to TPR's headquarters with a gift as a way to honor his parents. Nicolas says his maternal grandfather, Raúl Cortés, was himself a media pioneer. Cortés started the first full-time Spanish-language radio and television stations in the U.S., KCOR AM and TV. And he began what was called the Sombrero Network, which was a chain of stations that stretched west to California.
Mr. Cortés was, picture Desi Arnaz. He was handsome and debonair and well-dressed. And when he started his radio station, rather than focusing strictly on selling small ads in the local market, he went straight to New York City. And he wined and dined all of the media people who bought the advertising. And in those days, it was very glamorous. And they would go to the Copacabana or the El Morocco. And he really showed them a grand time. And they loved him so much. Usually national advertisers never bought one little local radio station in, you know, at that time in the middle of Texas. But they liked Raúl Cortés so much, and they enjoyed him, and he was such a great salesman that they bought national ads on KCOR, and it made him a multimillionaire very quickly. And that allowed him to do a lot of great things for the community. You know, he was twice national president of LULAC, and he personally negotiated the Bracero program between then-President Alemán and President Truman, so that while all the men were off in World War II, they could bring in other people to help work here in the United States. And so he did a lot of civic things, was very focused on the community, and having sold the Sombrero Network, which is what the people buying that advertising understood, allowed him to do a lot of good things.
Well, at the time, I can't imagine he would not have encountered any sort of racism. And he obviously had that charisma that people sort of oversaw his appearance, his background, and thought, we should take a chance on him.
I agree with that. But he did, sadly, he encountered the majority of the racism in his own city, in San Antonio. My mother tells a story. My mother's very fair and has red hair. And her father was more my coloring, a little, you know, nice golden color, shall we say. But he had beautiful white hair, and he was always beautifully dressed. And she tells me of a story where he would want to take her to dinner at a fancy restaurant here in San Antonio. And they'd get to the door, he'd have a reservation, and they would say she could come in, but he could not. These are also the days when the signs on many businesses said no dogs or Mexicans, and we were below dogs. So there was a tremendous amount of hatred, bigotry, and racism to overcome, but yet he was never deterred. That's what I find so fascinating about him. He really was a maverick. This is a guy that started out with nothing and worked multiple jobs and had the brilliance and the entrepreneurship and the creativity to pool that money and talk the owner of an English language radio station to allow him to buy time on his station to produce at first a half an hour, later an hour of Spanish language entertainment. And it was so successful that he went accumulating money, and that's what allowed him to apply for his FCC license in 1943. Of course, he wasn't able to build the station till 46 because there was a shortage of steel because of the war. People don't think about those things. There was no way to build a radio antenna. And so I didn't know him well. I only met him a couple of times. I was 9 when he passed away. He was very young. When he died, he was 65. But everything that I see that he did was really amazing for somebody that came from his background. And, of course, what I credit my father with doing, so my grandfather was kind of the visionary and the maverick, and he had all the wild ideas against all odds. I mean, because honestly, think about it. Who opens a Spanish language radio station in 46 and then in 55 a TV station in a country that speaks predominantly English, that has signs that say no dogs or Mexicans allowed? And in 1959, our state banned speaking Spanish in public schools. And so to not let any of those facts stop him from doing what he was doing is mind-boggling. And then to have been so successful is even wilder. But my father is very smart, very steady, and he taught me one word. And if he never taught me anything else, it was the best thing he could have ever taught me, and that's focus. He always said, just focus, because I'm a little bit like my grandfather. I have 50 great ideas. But he said, focus. Pick the best one, not the best 10. And I think that's helped me to be successful. And earlier off air, I was telling you that Dad really doesn't have a big ego, because if he did, we would have moved to New York or to Los Angeles. Instead, he gave New York to his partner, Renee Anselmo, and he gave, in the 70s, gave Los Angeles to his partner, Danny Villanueva, who had started out as a cowboy player in the Dallas Cowboys, and then Dad hired him to be the sportscaster in Los Angeles, and then the general manager, and then Danny became a partner, and he was a wonderful guy. But Dad could have taken any one of those two cities for himself, and he didn't. He chose to stay in San Antonio because he had a true love for San Antonio. This is where he received his education. It's where he met my mother, and it's where he found his fortune. And so he's always been very, very loyal. But San Antonio eventually became the center of operations for the entire network. And San Antonio was a real media beacon. And sadly, at the time, the city didn't really recognize that. And of course, we lost the network to Los Angeles first and then to Miami. But what I was telling you about Dad is he really felt that what he was doing was for the public. He understood, as a Mexican immigrant coming to San Antonio, to the United States, that having control of the airwaves was a privilege, not a right, and that the airwaves belong to the people of the United States, not to the companies and to the broadcast companies. And so it was a privilege, And it was important to him not only to entertain the people, but to help educate, because we had a struggle ahead of us. And it was necessary to be a place where people who may or may not speak English could come and not only get a good dose of their culture, but to also learn about how to become an American citizen. Dad used to have, in the 50s and 60s, they had shows on how to access your Social Security, how to go get a driver's license, how to register to vote. Subsequently, people like Willie Velasquez became regular fixtures on all the stations because he did some great things with the Southwest Voter Registration Project. And, of course, before that, Cesar Chavez. I mean, the radio and the television is how our people were able to learn about their great heroes. If it weren't for the radio and the television, I think a very small number of people would have known who these important men were, because there are only so many people you can travel around and meet. But the medium allowed them to hear them on the radio or see them on the television, and that was important.
And Mexican Americans at the time didn't really have any other way to learn about these figures or to learn about these issues other than on the radio and television. As you were saying earlier, there was a time where Spanish was banned in public schools, so they couldn't even speak their own language, and they definitely were going to be learning about Cesar Chavez or Willie Velasquez in the public schools.
That's right. That's right. And that's sad. And today, look, we have still have such a struggle with our history books in the state and trying to tell the true story of the Alamo or the true story of a lot of our Latino heroes. You know, we don't learn about Henry B. Gonzalez, who was our first Mexican-American congressman, or about so many others. We need to learn about Mexican-American and Latino business people, not just the celebrities, you know, because I find it's very important. And the reason that I chose to do this was I really feel that our youth needs to have positive role models. And there are some, but there are not enough. It's always the same recycling of the same two or three. And while I don't want to take anything away from them, there are thousands more that our youth should look up to and say, wow, I can achieve that. I don't have to be a singer or a musician or a ball player, which are all wonderful careers, but we can't all be that. Some of us have to be doctors, lawyers, policemen, firemen, business owners. And if our youth sees one of our people's names on a building and they go, wow, they could do it. Maybe I could do it. I think it's a point of pride.
That's Guillermo Nicolás, a San Antonio businessman and entrepreneur. He's talking about the legacy of his parents, Emilio and Irma Nicolás. Texas Public Radio's new headquarters will be named after the couple, who left a lasting legacy in Spanish language broadcasting in the U.S. When we come back,
and Dad said, it doesn't matter what they think or they know. It's only important what we think and we know.
More of our conversation with Guillermo Nicolás is coming up next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Irma and Emilio Nicolás may not be names you're familiar with, but if you grew up at a time before cable and remember not just the big three, but the big four networks, including Univision, you have Irma and Emilio Nicolás to thank. This visionary couple made Spanish language radio and TV programming the norm for today's audiences, and their legacy is being memorialized with Texas Public Radio's new headquarters, which will be named the Irma and Emilio Nicolás Media Center when it opens in 2020. Businessman and philanthropist Guillermo Nicolás is president of 3N, a privately held company specializing in urban redevelopment. He's also the son of Irma and Emilio Nicolás. He says the reason you probably haven't heard of his parents is by design. It's simple humility.
Well, going back to what I was telling you about Dad having been able to move to New York or to Los Angeles. If he had, I say it very proudly, his name would have been synonymous with Bill Paley or Bob Sarnoff, who started CBS and NBC respectively. But he wasn't in New York, and he wasn't a known figure, and it wasn't important to him to be known. I remember a story. I was about 10 years old, and it was a Sunday because it was rare that I got to see Dad. He worked so hard, but Sunday was always important. We went to Mass, and then we had a family lunch. And I think my mother had forgotten something, and we went to the grocery store, to the HEB on Broadway. And as we were walking out, a very important San Antonio businessman that everybody would know and who shall remain nameless was walking in as we were walking out. And he was very lovely to my dad, and he said hello very warmly and gave him a hug and all that. And then he said, "Emilio, how's the radio station?" And I started to open my mouth, and my dad squeezed my neck. And that stopped me cold, and he said, "It's great." And we walked out. And I said, "Dad," I said, "we don't even own radio stations." I said, "You're in the television business." And this person knew Dad very well. I was very surprised to this day, obviously. And Dad said, "It doesn't matter what they think or they know. It's only important what we think and we know." And so, you know, that was a very good lesson in modesty that I've not been very good at maintaining. I'll be perfectly honest. Before somebody out there says it, I'm going to say it. I'm probably more like my granddad. But it really was very interesting, and it said a lot about him that this important business person didn't even know the business he was in or care. And I told somebody once, I said, not until Dad sold the company. And by no means did Dad ever have a public relations person or a PR firm. Again, that was not his focus, but the people that bought the company did. And there was a big article on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And it had what he sold for, and it was a huge amount of money in 1987. And not until then did he get floods of phone calls from people that had known him for 40 years and were stunned at what he had achieved and what his partners had achieved. And I find that wonderful on one part and really sad on the other, because in his own city, to not know what he had created and that he'd built the fourth television network in the United States after ABC, CBS, and NBC, that to me was a little sad. But it was also another life lesson.
It wouldn't have been sad to him, though.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, he was horrified that it was printed. And the first thing he said is, "Oh, my God, now everyone's going to come ask me for money." And if there was one thing, you know, as a child of the Depression, one thing he hates parting with is money.
You know, going back to the humility of it, you know, the Texas Public Radio headquarters is going to be named after your parents. And you were telling me before we started taping, your father doesn't know that it's going to be named after him, and he might not ever know.
Well, I'm going to tell him that it's going to be named after he and Mom. But we're going to leave it at that. We're going to let him think that it's an honor Texas Public Radio is bestowing on them. It's part of our culture that I think we need to change. People that are not part of our culture don't understand why we are not more philanthropic. We are very philanthropic. We are very generous, a very generous people. But it's quietly, and it's to hospitals, to children, to food pantries, to perhaps sometimes to the Catholic Church. And so, for example, my parents, I know, would not appreciate my saying this, but they're very philanthropic, but in a very under-the-table, quiet, you know, give to the Red Cross or to or send someone's kid to school. And I found these things out from others, by the way. But we're a very loving, very generous people. And look at San Antonio. Whenever there's a crisis, whenever a family's home burns down or something happens, all of a sudden there's a GoFundMe page and we're giving tons of money. So we are generous. We just culturally don't think about giving big amounts of money and putting our name on a building. And I think that eventually we need to change that. And if you don't want to do it for your ego, do it for the young kids that are coming up that need that help and that support, and to say, wow, you know, be proud of their people, and to see other Mexican American or Cuban American or other Latino Americans' names on buildings to show their success and their generosity, and to also help promote education among our kids. And so he may not ever know I gave anything, and that's okay with me. My mother does, and all she said was, okay, that's enough. You need to save some money for yourself. And I said, okay, Mom. It was important to me that they leave this earth knowing that they're loved, that they're respected, and that their name will live on in perpetuity. And I think that's more important to me than to them, but that's what I wanted to do.
Guillermo Nicolás is a businessman and philanthropist. He talked to us today about his parents, Irma and Emilio Nicolás, a couple who changed the face of Spanish language media in the U.S. Thanks to a gift by Guillermo, Texas Public Radio's new headquarters will be named the Irma and Emilio Nicolás Media Center. The new TPR headquarters will be relocated to the stage house of the historic Alameda Theater on San Antonio's west side. Construction is expected to be completed in 2020. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.